Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Danny DeVito's 2002 film Death to Smoochie. Well, welcome to 2011, everyone. This is our first show in the new year, and I've actually got a couple guests with me this week. Our normal panel couldn't be with us, but in their stead, we have a couple good friends of mine, Free Reyes, who goes under the alias Root Mazer, or Mazer, as he's being known recently, on GeekTyrant.com. Free, thanks for joining.
Hey, glad to be here.
And Jim Napier, who also writes for Geek Tyrant fairly regularly under the alias Tiberius. Jim, thanks for joining.
Hey, glad to be here, man. Thanks.
Awesome. Yes. So, if you guys are just joining us for the very first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish up with your listener voicemails and emails. And you can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So, for the character name game, I've been doing it recently because we've been having some kind of scheduling issues with my co-host, but I'll do it again this week. So, the character name for this week is Ben Sanderson. So, you guys can be thinking about that as the episode transpires, and then at the very end, we'll return to it, and the point of the game is to kind of guess what movie that character is from, with the catch being that there has to be some sort of tie to a movie that was just released in theaters this past weekend. So we'll return to that at the end. So let's go ahead and move on into our media consume section, where we talk about what we've been watching, any kind of concerts we've been to, any sort of weird pop culture things that's been going on. Jim, let's start with you. What have you been consuming this week?
Well, most recently I had the chance to watch something on Instant Netflix. Joaquin Phoenix supposedly documentary or biopic of his lapse into rap star, and it was kind of interesting. I'm glad I actually had the chance to see it. I'm really glad though that I watched it on Instant Netflix. It definitely wasn't a movie personally that I would want to see on the big screen.
Right, and it's called I'm Still Here, is that right?
Okay, thank you very much. I'm Still Here. I had a momentary lapse, but yeah, I'm Still Here. I was thinking of something else, too. I also watched a French zombie movie today, The Horde.
Okay.
And it was kind of interesting. It definitely wasn't my favorite zombie film, but it was worthwhile.
Okay. As far as I'm Still Here goes, I haven't had a chance to see this, but, you know, there was this big hullabaloo upon its release about whether or not it actually was a real documentary or what was going on, and then eventually the word came out that it was basically kind of an elaborate hoax. I'm wondering, does that change the effect of the film for you? Like, did you think it was – I know you said you didn't want to see it in the theater, but do you think it's worth watching?
Oh, yeah. No. Don't get me wrong. I should have said that. It is definitely worth seeing. I mean, I'm a fan of Joaquin Phoenix. I mean, it has some great cameos in it as well. I mean, P. Diddy's there. You can't miss that. I mean, that's worthwhile right there. but all joking aside, it's really kind of cool because it's just got a nice feel to it. And, you know, I mean, it's not anything great in terms of that type of satirical comedy type, you know, but it was good. It was definitely worthwhile. And, you know, hey, you can't beat being able to see something on Instant Netflix.
Yeah. I mean,
so it is available right now. So
nice. Cool. Okay. Well, Free, let's go to you. What have you been consuming lately?
I've just been playing Gran Turismo 5 mostly and just waiting for, you know, all the usual shows to make it back.
Mm-hmm.
Justified. I'm excited for that.
Yes.
Great. I'm excited to see Smallville finish out its final season.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just all the NBC shows.
Yeah. Are you a Parks and Rec fan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was really weird, like, having it missing from the lineup because I really didn't like their, you know, the show that they had in place. I don't even remember the name because I would just skip it.
I think it was called Outsourced, and And
see, Pat, I liked Outsourced, but
yeah,
you know,
Pat said that it's worth, you know, it's not as like horrifyingly bad as people might assume. I actually didn't even really give it a chance. I think I've seen maybe one episode in its entirety, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Parks and Rec, though, I agree. I can't say enough. I'm so glad to have that back.
Yeah. That show got so much better in its second season. It's really great. Okay. Anything else, Free?
No.
Didn't even ask you. How is Gran Turismo 5? How is that working out for you?
You know, it's just as frustratingly challenging as all the other Gran Turismos. And, yeah, it's I enjoy it because it tries to be a racing simulator as opposed to, like, have a storyline and try to, like, be, like, underground racing or mm-hmm. whatever. It's just about a car, the coolest looking cars you can get on the most realistically detailed tracks mm-hmm. using, like, you know, simulated physics and all that kind of stuff, as opposed to, like, you know, how many times can I, you know, hit the, you know, the NOS button and
yeah.
power yeah. slide through a corner and yeah. Chase the police and stuff like that. I'm like,
yeah. Or like wander around trying to support like a faceless character that's supposed to represent you or something. You don't even have to really yeah. worry about that in those games.
Yeah. I like my racing pure.
Nice. Good stuff. I've actually been watching quite a bit since I've been back in LA. The past couple episodes of this show were recorded kind of on remote location in Florida. but I got a chance to see the first two episodes of Breaking Bad. I've never seen the show before. It's on AMC, and it's one of the kind of flagships of the show now with, you know, their kind of original content with Mad Men and stuff like that. AMC decided to start airing Breaking Bad on Wednesday nights, two episodes back to back from the very beginning to catch people up who haven't seen the show, which is perfect for me because I've been hearing such great things about it and I just haven't had the time to do it. So I just set a recording on my DVR and had a chance to watch the first two episodes. Are you guys familiar with Breaking Bad? Do you watch it?
I have never seen it. I have seen it that it is been playing lately on AMC, and I've been meaning to catch it, but mm-hmm. you know, I it's one of those shows that it's also available on instant Netflix, I think.
Oh, okay.
Just so you know, I could be wrong. I'm gonna have to check into that right now while
yeah.
we're talking, but it is definitely something that I want to see. I've heard great things about Bryan Cranston,
mm-hmm.
who's one of the leads, and then the other the younger kid,
mm-hmm.
Who I guess is his son from what I know. He was in Big Love. And I thought he was pretty good in that. I like Big Love, but, you know.
Yeah, I think if we're talking about the same person, it's Aaron Paul. It's not actually his son.
Thank
but
you. Okay, pardon me.
No,
see, that
fine.
Shows you how much I know.
It's right.
I need to watch the show.
For the uninitiated, Breaking Bad is a show about a high school chemistry teacher who is diagnosed in the very first episode with like terminal lung cancer. And in an effort to support his family, because as you all know, teachers don't really make that much money, he decides to use his chemistry knowledge to cook crystal meth with a former student of his who is involved in the drug trade in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where the show is set. And like I said, I've only seen the first two episodes, but the pilot was really great. And the second episode picked up right when the first one left off. So I'm not entirely sure if that's going to be kind of a continuing thing for the show where every single episode picks up like the instant after the previous one ends. But I have to say that I really enjoyed the first two episodes and would definitely recommend, you know, listeners of this podcast to check it out.
Well, I have some bad news. I was incorrect. It is not on instant Netflix, but you can get the entire Breaking Bad season one and two available on, you know, via
through
disc.
The DVD. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yep. Correct.
Nice. Okay. So the other things that I've been watching, two more. One is I've seen the first five episodes, which is kind of a random number, of season two of Party Down. Do you guys know anything about this show?
I've just heard of the name. That's it.
Free?
No.
No. Okay. All right. Getting into the obscure this episode. Party Down was a show on Stars, on the TV network Stars. It's been canceled. It only had two seasons. Season two is now available streaming on Netflix Instant. And it stars Adam Scott and a bunch of people from Veronica Mars. So, and it was actually created by Rob Thomas, who's the creator of Veronica Mars. So, Free, I would definitely think that you and your wife would definitely get a kick out of it, because I know you guys are big Veronica Mars fans. Dick, the guy who plays Dick Casablancas in Veronica Mars, is in the show. Paul Rudd also kind of co-created the series.
Yeah, I see that on here now.
And it's about a group of misfit actors and writers and kind of unemployed, struggling entertainment industry types in Los Angeles who work on the side at this catering company. So every episode is a new event that they are having to cater, whether that be, you know, a concert, a funeral, a birthday party, a bar mitzvah, whatever. So I really liked the first season, and season two aired a little while ago, maybe last year or something. I didn't get a chance to watch it as it was airing, so now I'm kind of catching up with it, and I'm really liking what I'm seeing so far. There's an episode called Steve Guttenberg's Birthday, which I believe is the fifth episode of season two, that even if you guys like don't watch the show, if you've never seen the show before and don't really think that sounds like your thing, please watch this particular episode, because it's very, very funny. There's a lot of one of the characters, played by Martin Starr, actually, who is in Freaks and Geeks and a lot of things, the Apatow stuff, is like a sci-fi writer, so he like writes all this kind of crazy sci-fi. Christopher Mintz-Plasse, who played McLovin in Superbad, guest stars as his kind of writing partner in this episode. I'm not going to give anything away, but it's really, really awesome. So if you guys are fans of Party Down, let us know. Email us, and not just newmovies@gmail.com. Okay, so then moving on to the third and final thing that I've watched is a documentary called Best Worst Movie. Have you guys ever heard of this one?
Heard of it, never seen it.
Okay, Free?
No.
Okay, all right, good. Three for three then. That's what I'm talking about. Okay.
Keeping it obscure.
Yes, exactly. Best Worst Movie, I've mentioned on this podcast before, because we actually watched Troll 2 and did an episode. I forget the episode number, but just look through the podcast page at notjustthemovies.com, and you can find that episode if you haven't listened to it. Troll 2 is widely considered one of the worst movies ever made. It's terrible on almost every level, but to me, it's so bad that it's just endearing. And a lot of other people happen to feel this way. There's a documentary out called Best Worst Movie that was actually directed by the child star in the movie. And Troll 2 came out, I think, in 1989. This movie came out in like 2009 or early 2010 or something. And Best Worst Movie actually got on disc through Netflix. That's not available on Instant right now. But yeah, we talked about the fact that a documentary existed, and basically the kid kind of, who's now whatever 20 something, wanders around the country like interacting with the people who starred in this movie, and like interviews the director and the writer and all these people involved with it, and kind of chronicles the rise in popularity of this movie that was so terrible that it didn't even get a theatrical release, but now has become like one of the most popular cult classic horror movies of all time. It's terribly bad, but it's hilarious, and I would definitely recommend checking out Troll 2 if you guys are into movies that are so bad they're good. So you can listen to our whole discussion about that on that particular episode that we did. Best Worst Movie, if you liked Troll 2, you probably should see this documentary, because it's like an hour and a half long, and it's really interesting to see, you know, what these people are doing now and their take on it. And like my favorite part were a lot of the interviews with the director of the movie, of Troll 2. And it's very clear, he's from Italy, so he speaks, you know, kind of broken English and stuff. It's very clear that he's really pompous and thinks that he was making this fantastic film, which just makes the entire thing so much better. That's a lot of the charm of Troll 2, is that everyone was really genuine in what they were doing, and it just turned out horribly. So it's called Best Worst Movie. Check it out. Throw it in your next Netflix queue. And yeah, I would highly recommend that if you've seen Troll 2. Okay, well, yeah, let's go ahead and move on into our review of Death to Smoochie.
Meet Randolph Smiley. He once was rich. He once was famous. And he once was sane.
Rainbow Randolph is the man. Yes, oh, yes, he is.
Now.
Traitor! My body was barely cold, and you went to work for the Rhino.
I gotta eat, don't I?
The only way to take back his career is to take down his replacement. In this jungle,
going on safari.
Safari. Hunting season.
What's this?
Trust me, Sheldon. It's a handy accessory to have in this business.
Never ends.
Carry my back now and forever. What's up?
Robin Williams, Edward Norton, Danny DeVito, Catherine Keener.
What does it all mean?
Death to Smoochie.
All right, so Death to Smoochie was directed in 2002 by Danny DeVito, actually. And I wasn't really, not really sure how many movies Danny DeVito has directed, but I'll look that up here in a second. But what did you guys think about Death to Smoochie? Free, let's start with you. We'll just kind of go around the circle and give some general thoughts real quick.
I saw this in theaters, actually.
Did you? Okay.
I did. I was taken by Joey Venkman on Geektarant.
Mm-hmm.
And Billy, and they just dragged me. I was like, "What is this? Oh, it's a Danny DeVito movie. He's a director? What?" Yeah, I came into it with like pretty much zero expectations when I first watched the film, and it was really weird. And you know, Barney, the dinosaur, had kind of come and gone. And it was still in people's minds, but it wasn't as popular. This was like after it hit, and it was like, it was really, really, I don't know. It was really weird because I feel like, didn't Fight Club just come out in like 2001 or something like that, or 2002?
Or maybe, I want to say Fight Club came out in 1999. I'll look that up also.
Yeah, but, you know, for some reason, my brain was still on Edward Norton from Fight Club, and to go from that into Death to Smoochie, it just like didn't make sense at all.
Nice. Jim, what did you think? Like, maybe did you see – what was your relationship to this movie before this podcast?
Well, I had no idea about it until I actually – one of my friends in college dragged me to see this in theaters. And during its initial run, and I'd graduated, but he and I, we went to go see this, and he's also the one that exposed me to films such as The Big Lebowski. So you have to kind of get an idea of this character. He's an interesting fellow who has a weird sense of humor, but you know, anyway, Death to Smoochie is definitely one of those films that is hard to kind of, it doesn't have a niche. It doesn't have a genre. It just is. And you know, I mean, it's funny, but it's also sad. It's disturbing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I kind of equate it. I've been doing a lot of thinking since you told me that that's what we were going to be talking about. And I mean, I liked Bad Santa, but I really equate it to the darkness in terms of darkness level. As Bad Santa is, it may even be dark. It's frankly dark. It's definitely darker. But in terms of when I think of other films that are dark, you know, but yet comedic, I think of Bad Santa and definitely Death to Smoochie. That's one of the big points I definitely wanted to bring up.
Yeah, I liked this movie a lot. I wasn't really sure what to expect. My sister's a big fan of Edward Norton, and so she had just kind of recently crossed this off of her attempt to go through and watch his entire filmography, and she was kind of warning me about it a little bit. But Danny DeVito, yeah, and Jim, you just told me, Danny DeVito has actually directed 14 films. I was not really aware of that, or 14-something, like episodes.
14-something, yeah.
And film and stuff. Matilda, of course, which I should have remembered, he actually directed, and that's one of my kind of favorite Danny DeVito performances, obviously outside of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. But The Death of Smoochie is really strange. Like, you know, you're talking about darkness. Yeah, it gets into some pretty dark territory in this movie. And the part about it that I really liked was that it's almost like an old school noir or something. Like, there's a lot of really shadowy figures and this kind of, you know, mob scene, and there's all these different characters and kind of subsets of society that are involved, and like people skimming off the top and taking all this stuff, but it's set in the world of like this really kind of colorful world of children's television, which is...
It's really weird, because it's in this, in that reality of the film, a kids network is able to have a number one show on TV, period.
Mm-hmm.
Which we know doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there's all these like references to Variety and the kind of trade magazines around here in Hollywood, like kind of, you know, blowing up and giving them all this publicity and stuff. And yeah, it's really kind of like a nationwide phenomenon. But all the shows, all the kid shows and stuff that are mentioned in this movie.
Oh, they shoot like near Times Square, which is a super expensive studio space.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah, very much. So, I don't know. I mean, there's so much to talk about with this movie, but it's kind of hard to just delve into it without just getting right in. I mean,
just a question. Like, I'm so used to seeing Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. Mm-hmm. Isn't it weird to, like, remember that he was an actor at one point?
Yeah, that was really bizarre for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I'm not even, like, that big of a fan of The Daily Show. Yeah, I like it, but it was that was really kind of strange.
You know, I'm looking back right now. I'm on taking a look real quick at his directorial, his films that he's directed. And his first film was Throw Mama from the Train,
mm-hmm.
which was also a very, if you look at it, pretty dark movie. And then he followed that up with War of the Roses. Also, if you haven't seen that, that's a fairly dark movie between Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas, very, very dark. I mean, about divorce, and it's comedic, but it's dark. So I think I have a feeling, aside from Matilda, I haven't seen Duplex, but aside from Matilda, technically, a lot of his movies are about either really dark subject matter or, historical subject matter with Hoffa,
yeah.
which I completely forgot he did Hoffa, but... You know, I just wanted to throw that out there. So he definitely has a grasp on the subject,
yeah.
In terms of directorial, but it's an interesting niche to carve out for oneself, I think.
Yeah, and even Matilda, I think, was like I saw that, you know, at a relatively young age. I don't remember the exact year that came out, but that movie is kind of disturbing too at points. There, you know, it gets pretty dark with, you know, the Chokey and stuff, like this massive, like, hulking woman of a principal, the Trunchbull, who, like, locks kids in this room that's basically a coffin with nails in it. Like, it gets pretty
messed
up. That's
true. I didn't bring that up. That's a good point.
So, yeah, DeVito is definitely familiar with this kind of stuff. And even, like, even It's Always Sunny, which I'm not sure how much input he has into that, like, creatively or anything, but that gets into some kind of dark stuff, too. So he's definitely, yeah, he's tread this path many times and kind of knows that area. And you're right, it is an interesting career path to take from a directorial standpoint, because a lot of people don't really, like the Coens or something will do a dark comedy, but then they'll also mix in with a bunch of different other genres. I feel like it's kind of rare that you find a director that just returns to the same style over and over again when that style is something like a black comedy.
Yep, that's true.
Yeah, the Jon Stewart thing I also have written in my notes for you. That's really strange. It was really bizarre seeing him. But like the dialogue and stuff, you know, I was talking about it being this kind of like this film noir. There's a lot of really kind of like dialogue that almost belongs in like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang or Lucky Number 11 or something. Like if we're talking about more kind of modern noirs, there's, like Robin Williams plays Rainbow Randolph, who's this kind of shunned, former TV show host who, you know, ended up getting busted by the FBI in this big thing. And he keeps like insisting and like wandering around going, "I'm Rainbow effing Randolph." Like that's his thing, which is funny in and of itself. But, you know, he's like muttering to himself, like, "Even a guy who's squeaky clean falls in the mud." And like, there's all these little just one-liners thrown throughout the movie that make it seem so much more serious than the subject matter of the film would actually indicate. So I kind of like the fact that it takes itself pretty seriously, even though the world that they're creating is, as Free mentioned, kind of unbelievable.
Oh, go ahead, Free.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say Adam Resnick is the one that did the writing.
Mm-hmm.
He got to start off in late night TV and then did Larry Sanders Show, a few episodes of that in the mid 90s. And then Lucky Numbers, and then Death to Smoochie. So, but aside from that, he also did a movie called Cabin Boy. He did the screenplay for that, which is kind of a weird movie. I couldn't sit through fully, but anyway, I'm just trying to point out that, I don't know, he does an interesting kind of, you talked about Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and the delivery style of, I have a feeling he picked that up probably from his TV experience, also on Saturday Night Live, doing a lot of writing for that. You've got to be, you know, it's very quick and very witty, quick dialogue. So
sure.
I think that might be a factor.
Mm-hmm. What did you guys think about Edward Norton, both his character and his performance?
I feel like he's the only actor that could probably pull this off. The first part of the film I was watching, I was like, oh, if they like redid this like today, maybe like Jack McBrayer would be great in that role. But then when it turns into like being like, oh, he's actually this guy that could be that, you know, a female character would be interested in, we go, maybe not. but it's pretty interesting to watch his transformation, and like you see him as this guy who's just like, clearly something's happened to him where he has just like this insane like personal defect that makes him be this good. And we kind of get, we get little bits that he, you know, has been in therapy and things like that to have all these qualities. But later on, you know, you see him like have this explosive anger and these things like that. And I think if you had someone like, well, I just brought up Jackman, like you wouldn't really believe it. It would almost be funny.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't, those darker moments wouldn't have as much weight as I think DeVito was trying to get.
I think that's a great point. I think Norton is one of the few people who's able to pull off that kind of fresh-faced innocence, along with like a really kind of darker side. I mean, if you guys have seen Primal Fear, he does that really well in that movie too. Yeah. Talking about Edward Norton, what did you guys think about Robin Williams?
I like him in his darker roles. I really think, even though I also like him in his very lighthearted roles, I definitely think a darker role is where he shines to an extent. This may not be it in terms of my favorite by far, but it definitely is a good one. I think he just has a good handle on these type of dark comedic roles and characters that are terribly flawed, but yet at the same time can also turn around and do kick-ass, you know, things like Good Will Hunting, Dead Poets Society, one of my favorite films that he's been in. Or even Mrs. Doubtfire, and you know, he's just a great actor, and he always will be. But you know, most recently, I can equate in terms of a dark role, World's Greatest Dad. If you didn't get a chance to see that, I highly recommend in terms of just being directed by Bobcat Goldthwait, and very, very sick and disturbing movie. But you know, it's a good movie to definitely watch back to back with Death to Smoochie, actually.
Cool. Yeah, that one's actually been in my Netflix queue, hovering around like position 3 or 4 for quite some time. I just haven't had the chance to actually get up and actually watch it. But
bump it to 1. Bump it to 1. I'm telling you.
Cool. I mean, Robin Williams, I think you're right. He does kind of shine in darker roles, ironically enough. And I think because I think the reason that is because that's more of like his sensibilities, like as a comic. I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever listened to his stand up or anything, but he gets pretty vulgar pretty regularly when he's not voicing over Disney characters and doing these kind of broad comedies and stuff that most of the America knows him for. I feel like he latches on to roles like this and kind of darker things because, A, it's more interesting to do than being like the kind of squeaky clean comic that we kind of, or most of America sees him as, and B, it just gives him an opportunity to kind of stretch his wings as an actor a little bit and just do more interesting projects.
Yep.
You know, we're talking about the darkness of this movie. At one point, Rainbow Randolph, like, essentially hijacks Sheldon Mopes, who is played by Edward Norton, and kind of puts him in the back of this limo and goes through this elaborate disguise process and takes him to this relatively what looks like an abandoned metal yard or something and puts him out on stage with this really bright light. And you're like, as the audience, we're just like, oh no, what is this? Like, there's some sort of sense of dread that comes over that part of the film, because this guy, Sheldon Mopes, is so innocent. Like, he's so fresh-faced and just really kind of ridiculous, almost comically so. And we're like, you know, something bad is going to happen here. And then it's unveiled that he's at like a Nazi rally and everybody starts, you know, doing this kind of Heil smoochy and all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm not even remotely, I don't know, supporting the Nazi movement or anything, but I will say that I found the storyline in that particular area a bit questionable, because the cops come busting in and then one guy drops a line like, this is unlawful assembly, and then starts like breaking, you know, arresting people and doing all this stuff, and I'm like, why is that unlawful assembly? I'm pretty sure, you know, like I said, I'm not condoning Nazism or anything.
Yeah.
But like, what is wrong with that? People gathering to do something, you know, as long as nobody's getting killed or anything. I'm pretty sure that's our right as Americans to gather and in group form like that. Yeah. Do you guys have any explanation for that?
I don't know. I just remember when that scene was starting to come, and I was like, oh, I can't remember what happens here. It's either like Nazis or like NAMBLA.
Yeah.
Like one of the two.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed just the darkness, and then how it kind of rises back and forth, and it's just really kind of over the top in a lot of areas. Like right after that whole big Nazi scandal in the movie, Smoochie makes his big return to TV, and they're playing Glory, Glory, Hallelujah in the background, and he's draped with American flags, and it's this big slow motion, like, epic rise from above and stuff, you know, kind of representing this resurrection that this character has. I like the movie and how kind of brazen it is. Like, you definitely don't see movies like that made very often.
And that's quickly followed by, I think, is like the most awkward scene in the entire movie, which is the howling scene where like he starts to like just kind of vent on the kids, mm-hmm. not emotion, like lash out at them, but he's kind of like revealing his dark side a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Then it gets, he starts howling and then all the kids are howling. You're like, how is this allowed?
Like children's programming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can tell, like, you know, that scene in particular, he goes on a little bit longer than everybody else. It's kind of like in Back to the Future when he just, like, goes a little too far with that guitar solo and everybody else is quiet and kind of staring at him awkwardly. So, yeah, that was definitely a strange scene. But, the one other thing that I wanted to mention is I don't think he's retarded, but the boxer character that has just been beaten to like a lower notch on the mental ladder, or a lower rung, I guess, not to mix metaphors. But anyway, he plays Moochie, who's the brother of Smoochie, and
yeah.
He gets murdered in the movie. Like this, I was like, what is going on in this thing? Like that's the kind of noir stuff that I'm talking about, like mistaken identity and all these really kind of genre tropes that are more reserved for film noir, and especially with like the Parade of Hope Foundation leader. I forget the character's name, but it's the guy that's played, the actor's name is Harvey Fierstein. He plays the guy in Independence Day. He was like, David, you guys know who I'm talking about. But yeah, like this really kind of shadowy figure with the fedora and the kind of dark face and the trench coat and stuff. And then like mistaken identity, Moochie gets freaking shot in the head by these gangster guys. And it's all, these guys are employees of this foundation that's supposed to like help children and stuff. And it's like, that's the kind of irony and just a layeredness that I kind of love about this movie.
Yeah. That character, pardon the, pause there, but yeah, that character of Moochie was really I don't know, it's so horrible to laugh at someone's, you know, shortcomings, but there's some definite humor there, but at the same time it is like sad and, you know, horrible that he gets killed.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's so horrible that I can't stop from laughing right now. I keep thinking about, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, you don't really expect it to happen, I think, which is why it struck me as particularly funny and kind of, you know, like darkly funny. I mean, the entire opening scene actually lays that out, really. Like, the opening frame of the movie is this red wall. It's in the studio where the TV show is being filmed. It's red, like the whole thing is very dark. It's this weird color scheme and these really shadowy figures in the background. It's all these shots and stuff of Moochie, who we don't know that point or early on in that movie, but it's him getting shot and like people getting beaten and stuff, like all these shadows on the walls and everything. But it's contrasted with this like ridiculously corny, happy kids TV show theme song in the background. So I mean, right off the bat, like, we know what kind of movie basically we're getting into. So DeVito does a good job, I think, as a director of kind of like telegraphing to the audience what's going to happen and kind of letting them know what they're in for. He especially, I think, is so good as that greasy character, that really kind of sleazy kind of slime ball. He does that very well in Matilda and also in Romancing the Stone. Have either of you guys seen Romancing the Stone?
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Jewel of the Nile, too. I've seen that.
Yeah.
He obviously loves those roles.
Yeah. And yeah, so it fit. And, you know, I think that mustache, that kind of that mustache that only Danny DeVito can grow, I think, helps that image. It's just so greasy and slimy. One other thing that I have written down here that I have to mention is this particular line of dialogue, which I found very funny. DeVito is sitting there with Edward Norton. He plays Norton's agent in the movie, and he says at one point, during the kind of height of Smooshy popularity, he says, "You got to get used to this lifestyle. Pretty soon you'll be pissing on $100 bills just to see the look on Franklin's face." And then Edward Norton just responds like, "I don't think I could do that. I have too much respect for that man and what he accomplished." So, I mean, if you guys, I don't know, if you haven't seen the movie and you're listening to this anyway, thank you. But that's an example of the kind of dialogue and stuff that you'll get in this movie. At another point, somebody says, "This place is crawling with cops. They'll jump on you like a trampoline." I mean, and like somebody says some sort of, I don't remember what the line is, but somebody else responds like, "That's an ugly string of words." So there's very much kind of Humphrey Bogart-esque dialogue going on pretty randomly and often throughout the film. What did you guys think about Catherine Keener? What are your thoughts on her kind of in general and then specifically in this movie? Freya, let's go with you.
She looks really good. Yeah. But...
Okay, I like that. I wasn't asking specifically good, looks, but I
good
like
good as in a hot way. Is that what you're getting at? Or okay, she is hot, but I'm
yeah,
just saying.
In the movie, yeah, I thought she was. I think she was really good. I mean, I don't feel like she did anything that another actress couldn't do,
mm-hmm.
really. But you know, her performance was really, really subtle, and it couldn't be where you could see what she was doing too much.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about
the movie? Although the movie telegraphs things from a very long, ways away.
Yeah. With her kind of introduction to Edward Norton's character, they do that like, you know, kind of Dutch angle, like sideways tilting of the camera, and it's like the slow zoom and stuff. And they might as well have been playing like Dreamweaver or something in the background, like straight out of Wayne's World.
That I could believe was, you know, like a kids show groupie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think she pulled that off really well. I think, yeah, she's one of the few people that it's believable that she does kind of latch on to each one of these figures. You know, it's got to be difficult as a casting director or even a director to find somebody, even age-wise, who would be believable enough to have been romantically involved with Robin Williams and Edward Norton. Like, those characters are so far separated from each other. And Catherine Keener has to walk that fine line of being believable in kind of her slow progression over the movie as to kind of getting more and more involved with Edward Norton's character, but also if there's a like a line that's thrown out offhandedly about how she used to be with all these other people, that has to be believable also. And I think she does a really good job of kind of making us actually believe that's possible.
Yeah.
Jim, what did you think about her?
Well, you know, I completely forgot that she was in the movie until just recently. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds bad. I mean, not to say that she was not really necessary, because you did bring up a good point. I don't really think that anyone else – I mean, there are other people that could have portrayed her character. But at the same time, I don't know. I really – it's kind of one of those fine lines. Mm-hmm. But now I'm looking right now at the Netflix page, and I was wondering, why the hell is Being John Malkovich – listed as a similar title, but then I completely Catherine Keener, there you go.
Yeah,
so at least we know their analytics work.
Yeah,
but anyway, more importantly, it is available currently on Instant Netflix. So if you haven't seen it and you are listening to this podcast, mm-hmm. what is holding you back? See that damn thing, watch it tonight, stop what you're doing right now aside from listening to this and do it right now. Yeah. But I need to rewatch it again, obviously, but I do remember Norton and DeVito primarily, and you know Robin Williams, of course, but I completely overlooked Catherine Keener.
Well, it's a fair thing to do because she is kind of overshadowed. She plays essentially the straight woman, you know, the kind of one relatively normal character in the movie. So it's understandable that she becomes, you know, knocked down on your list of memorable things about it.
Well, you know what's funny? With her being equated to what is thought of, you know, a straight character, in other films that she does, she is more of the left-wing, you know, a very sarcastic individual person. You know what I mean? She's always a unique individual. She does play people that are very similar characters. I mean, I have to say. But at the same time, in a lot of our other films, she is far from, you know, being overlooked.
Yeah.
In my mind.
Yeah.
So
definitely.
It's a definite change. You know, bringing that point up.
Mm-hmm. Catherine Keener, I think, is one of my favorite actresses, and I probably wouldn't have said that like 5 years ago, because she does tend to do movies that are a little bit not mainstream. You know, she gets a lot into the kind of independent scene and stuff. And probably 5 years ago, I hadn't seen nearly as many movies that she was in as I have now. But I think she's one of those that's kind of very underrated in my mind. Very rarely will hear people talking about Catherine Keener, and I think she deserves, you know, some more praise for her work, because I think she's really good at what she does.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so do you guys have anything else that you wanted to bring up specifically about this movie?
It was surprisingly well done visually. There's an ice opera, let's say, that happens in this film.
Yeah.
And it's done pretty well. I mean, as well as a kid show opera reenactment. There's so many things. Like, it's hard to describe it because you just kind of have to see it visually.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really bizarre. But I think my favorite line in the movie happens like right before it. And it's something like, there's a lot of kids and junkies out there who need my help. And until you see the movie, you won't understand what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah, definitely. I mean, even that concept of like the big final set piece being this ice show for kids is another thing that is kind of wonderfully subversive about this movie. Like, how many other movies can you say that an ice show is the finale of, you know? Like, there's not many climaxes of films that take place in skating rinks outside of that movie Sudden Death with Jean-Claude Van Damme is the only one that's coming to mind right now.
No, I have another one coming to mind.
Okay.
And Ronin.
Ronin. I've seen Ronin. I don't remember an ice rink scene.
Yeah.
I remember the
driving sequence, I remember for sure, but like,
I just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay.
Think about it. See it again.
Yeah. It's a good movie. I would definitely actually recommend Ronin. If you guys haven't seen that and you're into kind of action movies, especially car chases, like Free mentioned, that's one of the best car chases I think I've ever seen in a movie, like definitely top 10 or something.
What's great about it is you really see the actors in the car doing the stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's because they basically had like, they put two wheels in the car and a stunt driver was like in the seat next to the actor. So when they would shoot these stunt sequences, they just put the camera on the actor, and mm-hmm. he's really going through these actual streets and stuff like that and reacting to things. It's just he's not
the
driving.
The facial expressions are priceless on De Niro.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost comical at sometimes. I don't know how we got off into this tangent, but I'll tell you what, there is an ice skating sequence at the end of that. So just remember that back in your head when we are talking about Ronan. There is an ice sequence. Now, but the facial expressions are just and the passengers
not much
in the car.
There.
No, there isn't, but it's like I swear to God, some of the looks on his face are like, oh shit, I can't believe I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Like, oh, like, just, oh,
I have to pretend like I'm driving.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I mean, that, like, as funny as that is and kind of as badass as that is, it's not quite as badass as Jason Statham in the Transporter movies, because he actually does all of his own stunt driving in those films, which is really impressive.
Yes.
See, I didn't know that. I did not know that. That's pathetic. I didn't know that.
Statham, okay. Like, the two things that I love about Statham are he does his own stunt driving and a lot of his own martial arts and stuff, obviously. And then the other thing is that he used to be, like, the 12th best diver in the world on the British Olympic team or something before.
What?
Yeah, before he got discovered by Guy Ritchie, who just like Guy Ritchie happened to just like randomly run into him on the streets of London somewhere and like liked his look for Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. But before that, he was actually an Olympic diver for the British national team, which is pretty awesome.
I thought you also liked the fact that every movie he tries to find a way to take off his shirt, but I guess that's not true. Right?
Well, I mean, whatever.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking. Sorry.
No,
that was bad. I sprung that on you.
I would much prefer that to like Taylor Lautner taking out his shirt, because at least you know that Statham is.
Actually, I'd agree with you. I'll agree
Statham,
with you.
Statham, at least it's part of the story. Like he was like his car went off into the water, and now he's got to swim, and then he's got to change, right?
Yeah.
Lautner, it's just like, oh, I just got off my bike. Shirtless time.
and one final thing that I'll say, since we're off on this massive tangent, is in the Transporter movie, the original, that's one of my favorite things, is that he like his car gets blown up and he has this kind of he just looks pissed, first of all. He's not surprised at the fact that his car explodes, that somebody's put a bomb in it, but he also pulls out of his trunk a new suit that he just always keeps a backup in his car. So he takes off his shirt in that movie just to immediately put on a brand new suit, just so he's always looking badass in the suit. So I thought that was really
awesome. I'll give you that. That is pretty damn awesome.
It made me want to buy an extra suit and just, like, you
thank
know,
you.
Vacuum seal one. Just it, like.
It does. Okay, cool. All right. So I think. Is it fair to say that we would recommend seeing this movie to people? I mean, I understand that.
Just going off what Jim was describing, all his movies, like Throw Mama from the Train and War of the Roses, and you know, I guess maybe even John Malkovich and some of these other. It's a dark comedy, but it doesn't always focus on the comedy,
mm-hmm.
which is why I couldn't necessarily say it was a comedy.
Yeah,
fully.
Yeah.
No, it's a sad comedy. I mean, you know, that's I would definitely, you know, I already did recommend it. I mean, there's nothing holding you back from not seeing this movie. I mean, if you're a fan even remotely of Edward Norton and Robin Williams, this is definitely one of those films in my mind that should be definitely that should add it to your list of movies to watch. I mean,
yeah,
it's
especially
just fun.
Especially if you're fans of those guys, it's a must see. And you know, we talk about how dark it is, but it does kind of end on this happy note. You know, it had like a pretty cool end credits sequence with the ice, like the dancing and stuff when they're all in costume and like flying around through the ice and stuff. I was watching this and I was like, this is so elaborate. They must have spent a considerable portion of their budget just filming this kind of throwaway sequence that's going on in the back of the credits.
Very overly sugary ending.
Yeah.
Just to counteract all the other stuff that happened.
Yeah. But I like this movie a lot. I'm definitely glad I saw it. So, okay, let's go ahead and rev up the old Apple II. Tyler actually sent this out to me. I was borrowing it in Florida. It got kind of mixed up in the luggage and stuff and parts of it anyway, and he sent out the rest. So I've assembled it here, and I'll send it back to him as soon as he joins us next week. But in the meantime, I'll pull the comically oversized lever, and we'll be deciding what we're going to watch next week. Here we go. Oh, wow, the ticker tape is coming out, and it looks like Starman from 1984. It's a movie directed by, it looks like, John Carpenter, starring Jeff Bridges. So if you guys want to watch that along with us and check out next week's episode of the show, you can feel free to do that. You can email us and let us know what you think of Starman or Death to Smoochie or any of the other movies that we've talked about at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can always call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. So let's go ahead and move on into the listener voicemail section real quick. We actually have one, a really good one here. Looks like it's from Nick. So this is a long one. I'm going to warn you guys, but I'm going to read it mostly in its entirety anyway. So here we go. Greetings there. I just listened to your Signs podcast. Loved it. Incredibly entertaining to listen to. And in it, you were wondering what an atheist view was on the film, as the religious overtones pretty much prevent you from seeing it any other way. Well, I don't consider myself atheist, but I'm definitely agnostic, as I don't believe in the Bible, Torah, or Quran, or Harry Potter books, and accept them as fact. I think there's definitely the possibility of something out there, a creator of some sort, but as far as what it could be, my mind isn't equipped to even imagine it. With that said, Signs is my third favorite film of all time. I'm absolutely in love with it, and love how it was directed, written, acted, scored, etc. It was Shyamalan at the peak of his creativity, and was effortlessly tense and suspenseful. And in regards to how the religious elements of it affected someone like me, I can honestly say none of it really bothers me that much at all. I tend to view it as if the religious elements are simply an accepted fact in the world the film creates, so it makes it easier for me to stomach. Also, I think that the religious elements aren't completely overwhelming, so that any viewer, no matter what he or she believes in, can kind of insert whatever they want in the place of the faith crisis. Think about how many people view The Shawshank Redemption as the prison can represent something personally to the viewer that they may or may not be trapped in, such as a relationship, job, etc. Personally, or perhaps I'm looking too far into it, but I've never been offended by the ending, despite how much I usually avoid strong religious discussions. I'll skip ahead here. The characters are strong enough to support and sympathize with, so by the time the ending rolls around, you can't help but feel anything but excitement when things finally start turning toward their favor, which is emphasized greatly by James Newton Howard's excellent score, making the ending, as you said, truly epic. Anyways, that's just my two cents. I kind of stumbled onto your site when I noticed Signs was involved, and I'll be sure to further explore the other podcasts you've done. Keep up the good work. Awesome, awesome email, Nick. Thank you very much for basically answering my question, which I posed in the last episode. Cool. Yeah, cool. Just really quickly from you guys, what are your thoughts on Signs? Just, are you a fan or no? Yes.
I love it. Okay. It's a great movie. A great movie. It's definitely one that I have not watched enough again and again. Mm-hmm. You know, I've only seen it like once or twice. Mm-hmm. But it's still one of those movies that to this day, even, you know, all the some of the sequences are chilling, mm-hmm. In inspirational, are, you know, I personally the reason I say inspirational, because Joaquin Phoenix really getting his gumption back, you know,
yeah, and swing away,
and swing away, you know, I mean, come on, that's inspirational, in a lot of ways. So yeah, good movie.
Free,
definitely.
I've gone back and forth really on the film. I think when it first came out, and my first impressions of it were, I really liked it, and I purchased it, and then I rewatched it. And once the suspense is gone, because you know what's happening, the film for me really falls apart, and it's not that interesting anymore.
Okay.
I don't know. There's something about the ending and just the way it comes together at the end. For me, it just doesn't feel as satisfying. It just feels like it's smaller than it should be. It feels like it should have a bigger ending, but you know, I'm not making the film, so I don't know what that would be. But
yeah, okay, fair enough. Just by way of response to that, I think the ending is good because it is small. I think the entire movie is basically this kind of concentration, this look at one particular family, and I liked how it didn't really try to go global on the ending or anything. I think that might have taken a little bit away from it, but you know, whatever, to each his own, differing viewpoints. That's what makes this show good.
I don't think global would necessarily be the way to go, but maybe a little more action in it. I don't know.
Oh, I see. Okay. Gotcha. Okay, so we do have one more email, and this may or may not be spam, but I'm going to read it anyway. Larry writes, I was searching for online incomes and came across your website and thought I would ask how your business is going. Can you tell me, are you making good money with it? Does it require a lot of work? Thanks for your time. I don't make any money from this, Larry, and it does require a decent amount of work. So, that was so bland, I'm sure that was just spam. But just in case, Larry, if you're listening to this, that's your answer. So, anyway.
Asking questions that sound like spam.
Yeah, exactly.
How about that?
Yeah, if you're trying to be legit, Larry, come on, man. Put your backbone into it. So you guys can subscribe to this podcast for free in iTunes. Please do. Leave us a review if you want, or even if you don't want to, I'm asking you to. Check us out on Facebook, and we actually have a Twitter account at twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. And we have one new follower this week, and it is actually Jim at Napier's News. So thanks for the follow, Jim.
Well, I am happy to be following, and I'm going to make sure that you guys get that follower list up so that next time you are having 5 or 10 or 20, God forbid.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Followers.
I think we've plateaued at about 15 Twitter followers right now, so that's pretty awesome. No, I'm joking. But anyway, let's go ahead and wrap up the character name game. So let's finish this up. In the very beginning, I said the name was Ben Sanderson. So based on the fact that this character has to have some sort of connection to a movie that was released this past weekend, do either one of you have a guess as to what movie Ben Sanderson appears in?
No idea.
I have no idea. Thank you. No idea is right. That's the answer.
Well, let's think based on what movies came out this past weekend. Do you guys know anyone? There's only one really that came out in wide release, and that's what this movie, what this character is kind of connected to.
Not Blue Valentine. That didn't come out this week.
Mm-mm, that was before. This one looks really terrible. There's a lot of TV commercials out for it right now. It's a period
piece. Oh, Season of the Witch?
Yes, Season of the Witch. So working back from that, guessing that that one of the characters in that is playing Ben Sanderson in some other movie. Anyone care to guess maybe what?
Okay, so it's either Nicolas Cage or Ron Perlman.
Yes, you're right. It is one of those two.
I'm not familiar with this name, so it might be from like a Nicolas Cage movie that I'm not really too familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, let's see.
Yep, that's probably right, I would guess.
Okay, is it a movie about time?
No, I don't think so. Not in the most normal sense. I mean, all movies involve a time scale, but it's not a movie about time, no.
Okay. Is it a movie that's coming out?
No, it's been out for many years. I think it's like 20 years old or something. But
is this a good movie?
I've never actually seen it, so I can't speak to that.
Is it a series?
It seems to be pretty serious, yes.
Oh, okay. So is this National Treasure?
It is not. I've seen National Treasure. It's okay. Way older than that, like 10 years older than that, maybe. Any? Just start naming random Nick Cage movies, and you guys will probably stumble across it.
Moonstruck.
No, that's a good guess though.
So okay.
It's Let's see. How can I say this without giving it away?
You're saying it's old.
Yeah, here, I'll give you the exact date. Hang on one second. Let me look it up here. The exact date is 1995. And let's see, who else is in this movie that might not give it away? Richard Lewis is in this movie.
Is that one that he was nominated for?
I believe so. Cage plays an alcoholic in it.
Leaving Las Vegas.
There we go. All right. I didn't know. Because I haven't seen the movie, I'm not sure how big of a plot point that is, so I didn't know if that would actually get away or not.
Yes.
If you could have kept it vague if it was like Vegas, because there's he's in a lot of Vegas-ish movies.
Yeah.
Is he really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
One with Sarah Jessica Parker and James Caan. Names escape me, but yeah.
I'm sure you guys would have gone immediately to Leaving Las Vegas if I would have said Vegas. But anyway, I'm a big fan of Elizabeth Shue, who co-stars in that movie with him. So I'm looking forward to seeing Leaving Las Vegas at some point.
She's got to do more stuff.
Yeah, she really does. But of course, the connection, as you mentioned, was Nick Cage stars in Season of the Witch, which came out this past Friday. So
sucked major butt. It was nice. Horrible.
I have zero interest, so I'm glad that
that's a
valid assessment. So
stay in and watch Death to Smoochie.
There you go. Nice. Okay, cool. Well, that's pretty much going to bring us to the end of this episode. So where can people find more of your work on the internet? Jim, we'll start with you.
I'm on a site you might have heard of called geektyrant.com.
Yes.
I don't know. I write under the pseudonym Tiberius. Pretty crazy. I also have a little other site, napiersnews.com, and you can find me on Twitter, Napier's News.
Excellent. Cool. All right. Free?
I am not going to plug Geek Tyrant. I'm going to plug a web development company. We're going to probably announce something pretty soon here, robotvictory.com.
Sweet.
So we'll be announcing something.
Cool. Yeah, keep your eyes peeled for the big announcement. you guys can track me down on Twitter, twitter.com/BenPears. Writing sporadically at geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, notjustnewmovies.com, which is the namesake for this podcast. And you can find all three of us, actually, Jim, Free, and I, pretty regularly on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast. Music for our show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com. And they're also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out over there. And tune in next week for our discussion on Starman from 1984. I believe that's available in Netflix Instant Watch right now.
I think the last time I saw this was on like VHS or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. So
all I got to say about I got one thing to say about Starman.
Yeah.
Great soundtrack. Or actually, two things. Great soundtrack. Awesome Ford Mustang.
Okay, I'll keep my eyes open for that. Definitely. Cool. Well, yeah, special thanks to Free and Jim for stopping by and helping me out today with the show. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, glad to be here again.
Cool.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we will see y'all next week.